Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Jaya Giridhara Dhari Jaya Giridhara Dhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Jaya Giridhara Dhari Jaya Giridhara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Bana Chahari Tira Bana Chahari
Yamuna Tira Bana Chahari
Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Gauranitai Gauranitai Jaya Gauranitai Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada
Namah Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Pristaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatya Deshatarine. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gauravaktavinda. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayana Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jaya Mudirayat. Nashta Praishu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. The regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and my rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is destroyed almost to nil, and loving devotional service unto the Supreme Person, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Thank you for allowing me to speak on the Bhagavatam, requesting the blessings of all the senior Vaishnavas, that I can say something helpful just for today. And all the Vaishnavas. So we are in first canto, chapter 11, verse 35. Title of the chapter is Lord Krishna's entrance into Dwarka. Saeshanara lokesmin. Abhatirna swamayaya. Rimeshtriratna kutashto. Bhagavan prakrito yata. Saishanara lokesmin. Avartina swamayaya. Rimeshtriratna kutashto. Bhagavan prakrito yata.
Avatirna samayaya.
Please say along if you would like. Sa, he, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Esha, all these. Naraloke, on this planet of human beings. Asmin, on this. Avartina, having appeared. Sva, personal, internal. Mayaya, causeless mercy. Reme, enjoyed. Sri Ratna, woman who is competent to become a wife of the Lord. Kutashta, among Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prakrita, mundane, yata, as if it were. Translation. That, by Srila Prabhupada, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, appeared on this planet by his internal potency and enjoyed himself amongst competent women as if he were engaging in mundane affairs. So please repeat, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, appeared on this planet by his internal potency, and enjoyed himself amongst competent women, as if he were engaging in mundane affairs. Report. The Lord married and lived like a householder. This is certainly like a mundane affair, but when we learn that he married 16,108 wives and lived with them separately in each and every palace, certainly it is not mundane. Therefore, the Lord, living as a householder amongst his competent wives, is never mundane, and his behavior with them is never to be understood as mundane sex relation. The women who became the wives of the Lord are certainly not ordinary women, because to get the Lord as one's husband is the result of many, many millions of births, tapasya, austerity. When the Lord appears on different lokas or planets, or on this planet of human beings, he displays his transcendental pastimes just to attract the conditioned souls to become his eternal servitors, friends, parents, and lovers, respectively, in the transcendental world, where the Lord eternally reciprocates such exchanges of service. Service is pervertedly represented in the material world and broken untimely, resulting in sad experience. The illusion-living being conditioned by material nature cannot understand out of ignorance that all our relations here in the mundane world are temporary and full of inebrieties. Such relations cannot help us be happy perpetually, but if the same relation is established with the Lord, then we are transferred to the transcendental world after leaving this material body and become eternally related with him in the relation we desire. Women amongst whom he lived as their husband are not therefore women of this mundane world, but are eternally related with him as transcendental wives, a position which they attain by perfection of devotional service. That is their competency. The Lord is Param Brahma, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Conditioned souls seek after perpetual happiness in all places, not only on this earth, but also on other planets throughout the universe, because constitutionally, a spiritual spark, as he is, can travel to any part of God's creation. But being conditioned by the material modes, he tries to travel in space by spacecraft, and so fails to reach his destination. The law of gravitation is binding upon him like the shackles of a prisoner. By other processes, he can reach anywhere, but even if he reaches the highest planet, he cannot attain that perpetual happiness for which he is searching life after life. When he comes to his senses, however, he seeks after Brahman happiness, knowing it for certain that unlimited happiness, which he is seeking, is never attainable in the material world. As such, the Supreme Being, Parabrahman, certainly does not seek his happiness anywhere in the material world, nor can his paraphernalia of happiness be found in the material world. He is not impersonal, because he is the leader and supreme being amongst innumerable living beings. He cannot be impersonal. He is exactly like us, and he has all the propensities of an individual living being in fullness. He marries exactly like us, but his marriage is neither mundane nor limited by our experience in a conditioned state. His wives, therefore, appear like mundane women, but factually they are all transcendental liberated souls, perfect manifestations of his internal energy. Om Ajnana Timiram Dasya Gyanam Janaya Shilakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Pancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Eva Cha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. So here Krishna is being described as having transcendental pastimes with his eternal wives, the queens of Dwarka. And although it may appear as mundane relations, it is certainly not mundane. So it's very important for us to differentiate between material relationships and spiritual relationships. So it isn't here that the Lord is entering the Grihastha ashram and, you know, he's some kind of like wonderful polygamist and he has to go out and get mortgages and whatnot. It is not at all like that. It is perfectly transcendental and the wives are not ordinary women, but they are exalted souls. In the purport it says that they did many, many millions of births of tapasya to achieve that position. And the Lord is having transcendental exchanges with his eternal wives. Right? So it is, although it may appear mundane in some sense, there is nothing mundane about it. The wives of Dwarka are not women of this mundane world, but are eternally related with him as transcendental wives, a position which they attain by perfection of devotional service. That is their competency. So in the shloka I was saying that Krishna was enjoying with his competent women wives. Let's see, the purport was Sri Ratna, women who are competent to become a wife of the Lord. Right, so what is their competency? Their competency is that they were perfected in devotional service, and therefore they achieve that eternal position. So that is also something that we can strive for, to be our competency, to be competent in devotional service, and through that achieve something higher, an eternal position in the spiritual world with the Lord. So the competency of the women were their perfection of devotional service, and that can also become our competency, and we can also achieve the position in the spiritual world. So here Prabhupada is delineating between material relations and spiritual relations as having that material relations are full of inebrieties. So we talked about that a few classes ago. But just to touch upon it a little bit more, in a slightly different angle, from the purport, the illusion living being conditioned by material nature cannot understand out of ignorance that all relations here in the mundane world are temporary and full of inebrieties. They are broken untimely and they are resulting in a sad experience. So I'm sure most of you have had some experience with that, whether a loved one has passed away or they're just not in your life anymore. You know, it's like, what is that all about? You know, we had exchanges, we had relationships, and now they're no longer here. Like, there's something like very, very wrong about that, right? I remember even being when I was a small child, I was thinking about that. Like, when I was like five, you know, like how it's just not right that we all have to die, and that my parents are here taking care of me now, but someday my parents are gonna like pass away. And you know, I was just like bewildered as a five-year-old, and I was just thinking how it's just not, something's wrong about that, it's just not right, like we shouldn't have to die. Transcendental bliss is of different varieties, however, and the variety of activities in the mundane world are but a perverted reflection of transcendental bliss. Because everything in the mundane world is qualitatively mundane, it is full of inebrieties, whereas in the absolute realm, Because everything is of the same absolute nature, there are varieties of enjoyment without inebriety. That's from ninth chapter. So everything in the absolute realm is of the same absolute nature. And there are varieties of enjoyment without inebriety. So what does that mean? Everything is of the same absolute nature. Would anybody like to say? Okay, I'll have Prabhupada answer it. Anybody take a stab at it? Inebrieties, there is no such thing there in the spiritual world. Everything is a fact and everything is real. Therefore, Anandamaya, Ananda Chinmaya Ras. There is rasa, here is also rasa, but here rasa is not Ananda Chinmaya. Here it is material and mundane. This is material, there everything is real. I was thinking in a very sort of like visual or practical way, like what are these inebrieties, right? They're inconveniences, difficulties, defects. I was thinking like two conditioned living beings with all their like impurities, which they acquired over millions and millions of births, right? So there's two living beings, they have their two like bubbles of impurities and they're interacting with each other like with those bubbles of impurities, like if you can visualize it, right? So just like two sets of impurities like interacting with each other. So these impurities are like the inebrieties. Does that make sense? Like two bubbles interacting with each other? Two people in a bubble of impurities and they're interacting with each other. So it's something that isn't fact, right? Because who they are factually is like within that bubble. Right, the purified version of themselves, but they're interacting through their impurities. Therefore, we should strive to purify ourselves of these impurities so that we can have relationships that are based on our true selves, that are based in reality, our true selves, and that are free of inebrieties. No, I was just thinking, like, if you have some mundane relatives, and I certainly do, that, you have pictures of them with you, like, when you were a child, and, just, like, loving pictures and exchanges, and then, like, later on in life, somehow they, like, disappear out of your life, or they just prove to have, like, bad qualities or whatever, and I was just thinking, and I thought this, like, even when I was very young, I was very small, like, you're not my relative, no, you're not really, we're not related. Just a material relative. And I'm sure many of you have had similar experiences. I have a couple of quotes from Bhaktivinoda Thakur on inebrieties and the difference between spiritual and material interactions. It's from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. In the absolute truth, there is no difference between container and its contents, the body and its owner, or the occupation and its performer. In the conditioned state, these differences are found in the human body due to the misconception of identifying the body with the self. These differences are natural for the material objects, or these differences from who I am in reality and the coverings, me with my impurities and coverings. Well, not me, hopefully. Hopefully purifying that. Anyone. These differences are natural for the material objects. So these are the inebrieties. The difference between spiritual and material worlds is this. In the spiritual world, everything is blissful and faultless, whereas in the material world, everything is a temporary mixture of happiness and distress, full of impurities arising from time and place. So these inebrieties are impurities that are arising from time and place. Therefore, the descriptions of spiritual world are not imitations of the material world, but rather they are coveted ideals. Right? So in the material world, the relations are full of impurities arising from time and place. Does somebody want to comment on that? What are these impurities arising from time and place? And therefore, the descriptions of spiritual world are not imitations of the material world, but rather they are coveted ideals. Would somebody like to say something about that? Okay, I guess, would you like to say? I guess it speaks for itself, for impurities from time and place. Right? Because in the spiritual world, there is no time and place. Another point made in the purport was that the conditioned souls seek after happiness in all places. And why is that? Because constitutionally, he is a spiritual spark who can travel anywhere. So that is his true identity. And so having that like internal conception, he also thinks that when he's in a material world, he can travel anywhere. You know, perhaps try to go to the moon or Mars, but he's unable to do so because he's bound by the material laws and the modes. By being conditioned by the material modes, he tries to travel in space by spacecraft and so fails to reach his destination. The law of gravitation is binding upon him like the shackles of a prisoner. By other processes, he can reach anywhere, but even if he reaches the highest planet, he cannot attain that perpetual happiness for which he is searching life after life. Even if he reaches the highest planet, he cannot attain that perpetual happiness for which he is searching life after life. So why is that? Why can he not find perpetual happiness even if he goes to higher planets? Even if he goes to Brahmaloka, why can he not find perpetual happiness? Anyone?
Still the material world.
Still the material world, and there is birth and death. Gita 8:16 Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punarvartin Arjuna Namupetya Tukanteya Punarjamana Vidyate. From the highest planets in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery when repeated birth and death takes place. But one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, he never takes birth again. So what is the place of misery? Wherever birth and death takes place. So therefore, we should not strive to make our temporary, our permanent situation here in this place of birth and death, right? Because we will just be disappointed and disillusioned by that. But yet, even though we see people dying all the time, still people are trying to make a permanent situation here. Because we are conditioned by the covering potency of Maya. People in general are conditioned by the covering potency, which makes them think that this place is okay. I can be happy here, I can make a permanent situation here. And Yudhishthira Maharaj was asked by Dharmaraj in the Mahabharata, what is the most wonderful thing in this world? Day after day, countless living entities in this world go to the kingdom of death. Still, those who remain aspire for a permanent position here. What could be more amazing than this? Right? So, instead of trying to make a permanent home here, what we should do is see it as a place of it for what it really is, which is a place of reformation and a chance for us to transform ourselves so that we can be fit to enter into the spiritual world. Right? It's not a place for permanent residence, but it's a reformatory school, a place for punishment and reformation. And for us devotees, we can see it in a more positive light. You know, if we put ourselves in an internal potency, then we don't have to be reformed by the whips of Maya. We don't have to be punished, but we can blissfully engage in Krishna consciousness and at the end of this life enter into the spiritual world. And we can see the Earth planet as an airport because it's a middle planet, so there's not too much suffering and not too much enjoyment, right? So therefore we can not be too happy here, but also not be so miserable that we can't engage in Krishna consciousness. So we should definitely see it as a benediction that here we are and we're at this planet, which is like an airport for the spiritual world, and many demigods are trying to come here for that reason. And not only are we here, but we're here now at the time of Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya only comes once in a day of Brahma. So we are in a very, very fortunate and auspicious position to engage in devotional service. So this is how we can see this material situation that we're in a very positive light as devotees. As devotees only, right? For non-devotees, it is a different situation. This is from the 13th chapter of Gita. Because they are conditioned, they are averse to serving the Supreme Lord, thus they are not allowed to enter into the spiritual sky. But with the coming forth of material nature, these living entities are given a chance to act in the material world and prepare themselves to enter into the spiritual world. This is the mystery of the material creation. So we don't have to see it as miserable, but it's an opportunity for us to be given a chance to act here in such a way that we can prepare ourselves to enter into the spiritual world. And that is the mystery, Prabhupada calls it, the mystery of the material creation. Right? Mystery, and it's also wonderful. And we can see it as a good thing in an optimistic point of view. And what is that solution that we engage in here in the material world, where we can make this a positive place and see it as a opportunity to enter the spiritual sky? The solution is changing our desires. One has to rise, therefore, above the three modes and become situated in a transcendental position. That is called Krishna consciousness. But he has to change that conception. That change can be effected only by hearing from authoritative sources. The best example is here. Arjuna is hearing the science of God from Krishna. The living entity, if he submits to this hearing process, will lose his long-cherished desire to dominate material nature. And gradually and proportionally, as he reduces his long desire to dominate, he comes to enjoy spiritual happiness. Right? So it's a changing of our desires and an actual change of heart and purifying ourselves. So this is all very possible for us, all within our reach. So we should try to stop lording it over here in this place, in place which is not meant for a permanent situation. We should understand that if we don't engage in devotional service, it's a place of suffering and calamities. And so we should understand the material world for what it is. It's for us to achieve something higher and for us not to settle here. Yeah, I have some examples of how the material world is full of calamities and there's danger at every step, but before we go into that, if anybody has something to add? There's some. Thank you, Shesha Prabhu.
I thought it was interesting you were reading how Prabhupada describes gravity as a law that is forcing us to stay in this planet. Even though we want to go elsewhere, we can't because of the law of gravity. You don't often think of gravity that way as, you know, proving that God's in control, because none of us can overcome that law. But it's Krishna's arrangement.
Thank you, yes. Thank you. I love that when somebody points out something that we've already read, but just to sort of highlight it again and to see it in a different light, I just love that. Yes, we are bound by these laws here on this planet. And although we have that eternality chip within us that we think we can go anywhere because the spirit souls we can, but we are bound by these laws of Krishna and we're bound by this body. And there's no way out except devotional service. Right? There's no way out. So in one sense, we don't have a choice. Thank you, that was very nice. Anyone else? Something that you want to point out or add something? A Okay, yes, Madam T.
I had like a couple of questions that were there in my mind. One in the very end, you said about it's about changing our desires, and I wanted to know more about from you how to change those desires, how to elevate our desires. And another thing was talking about relationships in the spiritual world as opposed to in the material world. And my question was, what are our relationships as far as amongst Vaishnavas? What category do those
thank
relationships?
You. Yes, that's a very nice point. Yes, amongst Vaishnavas, we do not see our relationships as material relationships, right? We act in such a platform where we put Krishna in the center, right, and we deal with each other in a certain way, which acknowledges our true identity and who we are, right, as devotees of Krishna. And so, in that way, as Vaishnavas and devotees, we are spiritualizing our material relationships. Right? So, and as we're purifying, things become more and more clear. Right. So. Yes, as Vaishnavas, we are trying to spiritualize our relationships. And then your other point was, what was the first thing?
How to elevate our desires.
It's sort of very simple, not easy, but simple. We engage in Krishna consciousness. And I'm sure all of us have experienced that as we progress year after year, that our desires change. And it's not our doing, it's through Krishna's mercy, right? He changes our desires and he changes our heart and he purifies our nartas through his mercy. We have to like endeavor, right, and to achieve the mercy, and we can see ourselves that we have changed over the years. You know, things that were important many years ago are not important anymore, or things that used to disturb us, they don't disturb us anymore, right? We feel increasing happiness, increasing bliss. So it's very simple for us is to engage in devotional service, and especially kirtanam, you know, chanting, hearing and chanting, especially those processes, and let the potency, like Krishna's potency, act on us. And that was a very nice statement here from Prabhupada, which is from the 13th chapter in the Gita. That change can be effected only by hearing from authoritative sources. The best example is Arjuna. He's hearing the signs of God from Krishna, the living entity. If he submits to this hearing process, so there's your answer, he will lose his long-cherished desire to dominate material nature, and gradually and proportionately, as he reduces his long desire to dominate, he comes to enjoy spiritual happiness. Anyone else? Any other questions? Okay, well, I had a couple examples like from history how this world is like very precarious. And I hope you enjoy these little like segues. If you don't, let me know and I won't, you know, introduce them anymore. But just to show how precarious material life is in material world. I mean, there's so many examples, but the one thing that comes to mind, which was like a huge disaster and which nobody expected, was this when the Titanic sank in 1912. It was like a huge disaster. It was almost like Krishna's hand was in that, because over 1,500 people died, and nobody thought that could ever happen, and they had built a ship that they thought was unsinkable, right? So because they thought it was unsinkable, and because they thought they had the latest technology in shipbuilding and engineering, they sort of ignored some warning signs, right? Because they thought they were just like unsinkable. So things that they should have like taking caution on, like they didn't. And for example, like they left too early in the spring. Like there were still like icebergs in the North Atlantic, and they received many warnings, right? So that was like Krishna trying to like warn them, like don't go. But because they thought they had this like unsinkable ship, they went anyway. So they left too early in the spring. It was like the coldest spring in 50 years, and there were many icebergs still in the North Atlantic. Then they received many radio warnings from other ships, like as they were sailing, that, you know, be careful, there were icebergs. And again, they like ignored those warnings. And they had left at a time when there was like no moon, so the watchmen didn't have like good vision. And then even when they saw like the icebergs, even when they saw like an iceberg up ahead, still they did not, you know, they did not really take it seriously. Like they tried to turn and they turned the wrong way, and then eventually they just went like slow ahead. The command was like, go slow ahead. Like meaning like we have an unsinkable ship and we can, you know, even if we hit an iceberg, we'll be fine, right? So they didn't take like Krishna's warning seriously. They had many opportunities to avoid that disaster, but they thought they had an unsinkable ship, right? So then even when they hit the iceberg, even then, it was like they didn't take it seriously, you know. They didn't have enough lifeboats. They didn't get on the lifeboats correctly. You know, no way did anybody think that the Titanic was going to sink, right? They created an unsinkable ship. So they ignored all the warnings. They weren't ready. They didn't take it seriously, and eventually, right? There was no other ship coming to rescue them for 4 hours, because they were all like aware of the icebergs and they were not like in that area. So for 4 hours, there was, once they sent out the SOS, there was no ship coming. And over half of the people on the boat, which is over 1,500 people, ended up like dying in that cold North Atlantic. And the ship sank, as you know. And nobody could believe that this happened, right? So they thought they had an unsinkable ship. And there are many sort of read accounts of how people were crying when they were on that freezing water, whether they were in a boat or just like hanging on to a piece of wood or some kind of raft, you know. And they were like, why is this happening to me? This isn't, you know, they were crying, this isn't happening, oh my God, you know, how can this be happening to me? You know, and then they died. You know? Eventually, like after 20 minutes, the cry stopped and many of them died. I thought that was an interesting example from history of this material world and how it can things can change in a moment, right? Especially if you don't take to Krishna consciousness. Okay. Does anybody have anything else they wanted to add? Yes, some personal realizations of like calamities or catastrophes that make you realize that this is not a permanent place, this is not a friendly place. If we don't take to Krishna consciousness, yes, Madhumati?
I heard a story about the Titanic. There was one family, a farmer, I think, and when they heard about the Titanic was going to go, so they, I guess it was way, I don't know much about the Titanic, but I guess there was told a while ago that this is going to happen, and then assuming people were buying tickets or something. So this family, a farmer, they started really saving all their money to go on the Titanic.
Yes, it was like a big deal.
Big deal, yeah.
First of its kind. Of
yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so all their earnings and everything they had saved and given the money for the whole family, which they might have been 4 or 5, I don't remember. And unfortunately what happened, that just before the Titanic was about to leave, maybe a week before, unfortunately for them at that time, was that the mother got really sick and some real disease. And so the mother insisted that the father and the son go, and she would stay back with the other two kids. Wow. Mm-hmm. And as the and the man of the house was just like, you know, feeling all that, you know, they're left with nothing, and this was their thing to go, and now the mother wife can't go, and you know, and he just felt like he couldn't go without the wife, and the wife kept on insisting that you should go. Eventually, but he said, no, I can't, I'm not going to go. Eventually, the day the Titanic left, they saw the Titanic going, and they were feeling so sad. Mm. But Mare Krishna Rakhe Krishna Mare Ke.
Yes.
And so sometimes, you know, and then later on when they heard, they were just like, wow, God's grace, you know.
Yes, and who so, was not supposed to be on that ship, they... Yeah. They were not on that ship.
Yeah.
Similar to 9/11, which, believe it or not, I was supposed to be there on 9/11 in the Twin Towers, but it wasn't my time, and so Krishna made me not be there, but I was supposed to be there that day. I didn't work there, but I had a job interview there. And somehow it happened that I had to change the day. Mm. Oh, my father was coming from Europe, and I had to like go the day before. So I was actually at the World Trade Center. My interview was for 9/11, but because of something, I had to change it to 9/10. And I was there at 9/10 the day before, and I was walking through the like outside and looking up at the towers. And I had the thought of maybe like Krishna put it there, like this isn't like safe to work here. Somehow I thought it was like they're too high. And it's like somehow I felt this like feeling of not safe, it's dangerous. And the next day, the day I was supposed to be there, I was watching on television. So somehow also I wasn't supposed to be there. I was there the day before, yeah. And so many stories like that, right? So many stories who were supposed to be there that day and somehow they weren't there that day. Yeah, if it's your time, it's your time. And maybe Krishna was accumulating all those people on the Titanic who were supposed to go. I don't know. We can't say. Or maybe it was an untimely death. I who's to say? But yeah, some people were protected, like you said.
There's one online question from Mahavishnu Priya Mataji. It appears that the greatest impediment in spiritual life restricts us by our material consciousness, rendering us unable to see beyond and experience the full reality of Krishna consciousness.
That's nice.
Can you comment on this?
Thank you. That's a very deep point. Thank you, Mahavishnu Priya, for that. So I think what she's saying is like because we're limited by our material senses and by these laws that we mentioned, that we can't see what is beyond, and so that is like limiting us, right, to want to try to get out. I think that that's what she's saying. Yes, so somehow if we are fortunate, Krishna gives us experiences which make us realize that it's not a good place. You know, and I'm sure many who have come to devotional service have had to go through something like that, or just some calamity or something happens where you just realize it's just not right, you know, this isn't a permanent situation and I have to die. So through some mercy, I would say it's through Krishna's mercy, he gives us that feeling in our hearts where we feel like dissatisfied and we come to see this place as something's wrong, and then also through mercy, right, we get the association of the Guru and we get the Bhaktilata Beach in our heart. So it's all through Krishna's mercy when we have enough spiritual credits to receive that mercy, and then we can begin our journey for something higher, right? But yes, we are, before all that happens, we are certainly limited by our senses and the inability to see beyond, and we're shackled, as Prabhupada says, we're shackled as prisoners by the laws of gravity. Okay? So it's only through Krishna's mercy that we get the opportunity, not through our material senses, not through our material mind, it's only through Krishna's mercy that we get that glimpse of something higher or desire for something higher. Right? Otherwise we are just stuck here. We're just shackled. And get the association of the devotees. Thank you. It's a nice point. Anything else? Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Chai.